Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT Photo with Catherine Hall and Leo Laporte, episode number 34, recorded on November 22nd, 2011. Penny De Los Santos.
TWiT Photo is brought to you by Ford, featuring available Sync with My Ford Touch. Sync with My Ford Touch gets you to your destination with integrated turn-by-turn directions and directional arrows displayed right behind the wheel. Check it out in the new 2012 Ford Focus and at Ford.com/technology. And by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to Netflix.com/TWiT. It's time for TWiT Photo. Hello, everybody. Welcome. Leo Laporte here. Catherine Hall there. Hi, Catherine. Great to see you. Our wonderful host and photographer in her own right. We never give you enough credit. You're one of the best photographers I know. In fact, that's why I wanted you to do this show.
Thank you.
And bringing on other great photographers, and that's what this show is all about, is talking about the art. So I can get better. You're good enough. Don't get any better. You already intimidate me. Catherine's website, CatherineHall.net. This is her blog. Two things we want to mention. First of all, we're going to talk about food today.
We are, and it's perfect timing. Thanksgiving's coming up, so everybody can load up on tips.
For taking pictures of the turkey.
During the holiday. Yes.
And we should not forget that it is the last chance. If you are a photographer, you don't have to be a pro, but you think you're pretty good and you would like to be on our show, the TWiT Photo Guest Quest wraps up at midnight tonight, as we tape this live, November 22nd. So if you have not yet posted your portfolio, hurry. We've got some of the best past TWiT Photo guests as judges: Art Wolf, Zach Arias, Colby Brown, Frank Durhoff, and Tamara Lackey, of course, Catherine herself. So you're going to be looked at by six.
I'm not judging.
Oh, you don't get to judge?
No, they're judging.
Oh, you really wanted to let yourself off the hook.
Yes, I am. I'm strategic.
Neither Catherine nor I have anything to do with why you didn't get picked. And if you got picked and you're happy, we had a lot to do with it.
Yeah, everything.
So the entry details are at bit.ly/TWiT Photo Guest Quest. Best thing to do, go to CatherineHall.net.
See, I'm glad because there's a lot of good work in there, and I don't want to even be on the hook.
Are you seeing some good entries?
There's good entries.
That's very exciting. What are you? It's not a contest. It's not a competition. The winner will.
Well, it is a competition.
Okay.
The award is
being on the show. You'll be featured on Catherine's blog, on our TWiT blog, and most importantly, you'll be a guest on an upcoming episode of TWiT Photo. We'll also have honorable mentions, two of them. But you have till 11:59 Pacific. It says standard, but we mean daylight, Pacific Daylight Time, tonight. No exceptions. All the details are at Catherine's blog, CatherineHall.net, the TWiT Photo Guest Quest. So
perfect. And then I do have my tip of the week.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what your tip is.
Okay. If you go to home,
yep.
A lot of times, this is just a tip on shooting food. And a lot of what makes, and Penny will get into much more to depth about this, but a lot of times when you shoot something, it just doesn't look right.
Yes.
Great on the plate, but not. It's the lighting more than anything. And a really quick way of fixing that is using natural light and soft light.
Ah.
And so these are just window lit. Very simple.
Beautiful.
Didn't require any gear.
Was it a cloudy day?
It doesn't need to be a cloudy day if it's window light.
Okay.
So, unless it's streaming through the window, obviously.
Right.
Then you would.
But harsh light probably would not be ideal for something
like
that.
Well, I think you can use. I mean, Penny will get into this, but I think shooting food is sort of like shooting people. So if there's a soft light.
Right.
But there's times where you want that hard light. So, you know, you got to.
Depends what you're going for. Right.
Yeah. So, but there are standards. And if you're going for something, you want a natural light, soft, is a good way to start if you're getting started with food.
Tell us about our guest today.
I am so honored and excited to have Penny De Los Santos on with us today. She is, her imagery is evocative and so, organic yet artful and uncontrived. It's this really beautiful mix of natural, but you look at it and you're like, how does it look so good if it's captured naturally like that? She has a very photojournalistic background. She worked for National Geographic. She got one of the extremely coveted internships there that everyone goes after.
Wow, that is a good internship.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I'm excited to talk to her about that. But then she started her career off as a photojournalist, and then she shifted into the food world. And you can see her food work has a very documentary, story-like feel to it.
Senior contributing photographer at Saveur Magazine.
Yes.
Penny De Los Santos, welcome to Twit
Photo.
Thank
you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I'm super honored to be here with you guys.
Thanks. So thanks. It's Thanksgiving. This is kind of amateur hour for photography. We're all going to be taking pictures of the feast. But I have to observe that thanks to camera phones and apps like Food Spotting and Twitter and Oink and on and on and on, people are taking more pictures of food than ever before. And immediately, the first thing you realize when you take a picture of something that looks incredibly delicious is the picture doesn't do it justice. It's like taking a picture of a sunset. It doesn't look as delicious in the camera. So are you going to help us make it look delicious?
I can try.
More delicious.
Do we have to spray it with... we've all heard these food stylist stories where they spray it with mineral oil, they coat it with wax, they make it totally inedible, they put marbles in the soup to bring the... Do you do that kind of stuff?
No.
Yay!
You do a little bit of that, but I usually hire a stylist that does that. I don't really...
So it does happen.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that happens sometimes. But for the most part, it's real food.
What would you say? What percentage is real food, like... as you would eat it versus stylized fake food?
I would say it's 90% really? And you would eat it.
Was just with you or with most food photographers?
It depends. If it's editorial or for a book, it's almost, I would say, 98% edible. And then if it's commercial, it changes drastically.
The other direction. If you're doing a Jack in the Box commercial, you're definitely not taking a picture.
Which is kind of, you see a lot of the commercial food and it just doesn't.
You can tell.
It doesn't edible or exciting.
It looks like it's made out of rubber. It looks like those fake sushis they put in the window of Japanese restaurants that have been sitting there for 5 years.
Oh, God. Those are horrible.
They're not real. I mean, they're beautiful in a way, but they're obviously not edible.
Yeah. So, Penny, what's the weirdest contraction that's supposed to be real food that you've ever had to photograph that isn't real food?
You know, I've always photographed real food. I haven't ever had to do anything that wasn't real.
Well, that's probably because you're a photojournalist, right? I mean, that must inspire it a little bit.
Right, and everything that, you know, the Saveur is pretty serious about, always making sure that the food is super organic.
I want that breakfast.
Yes, I know.
Oh, my golly.
For one of Saveur's issues.
Leo hasn't eaten lunch yet.
This is bad. This is going to be bad.
Yeah, you should eat before. Before you do a food photograph, for sure.
Is it like shopping? You don't want to go grocery shopping on an empty stomach. You don't want to do food photography because you'll be tempted to take that little shrimp off the plate and then it's ruined.
Yeah, you could be. Yeah.
So tell us about the evolution.
Yeah, how did you get to that?
Yeah. So talk to me about National Geographic and internships. So you basically, in essence, were trained working for National Geographic. What were the most valuable lessons you learned from that?
The Geographic was it's a pretty challenging place to work at, but their philosophy is they throw you in the middle of the lake, and if you're good, you make it to shore. So they don't hold your hand at all. So you problem solve 100% of the time. And, you know, you'd think that every assignment is super visual. It's not always the case. And you're more illustrating an idea in a story. So you're trying to think of the components of the story that you're trying to illustrate. And then you're trying to figure out, how do I make a photograph around those things? Which is very different than what I thought it would be like. Like, I thought you'd be thrown into these highly visual situations and the pictures would just jump out at you. And it's not like that at all. You problem solve. And so that was probably the biggest lesson I learned, is problem solving.
So
how do I make...
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, so it sounds like you're almost like an illustrator in a children's book. You're given a story and your job is to bring it to life in the imagery around it.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you get assigned to do a story on a crazy birding culture in Brazil, you know, you're going all over the country, but you know, two or three of those photos are going to be really original, and then you're going to start repeating yourself over mm-hmm. and over and over. So how do you make it more interesting? Mm-hmm. That's the challenge. So that was probably the biggest thing I learned from my experience with Geographic, was just problem solving and how to elevate photographs to make them even more visual. What's that saying, you know, make lemonade out of lemons.
Did you come out of a college photo?
Well, I have an undergraduate degree in journalism, and then I went to graduate school in a photo-driven visual communications program.
Where was
that? At Ohio University.
Okay. So, and that was your beginning of your education. It sounds like National Geographic took it to a whole other level.
Yeah. Right, yeah. I mean, I got that internship right after graduate school, right. And my first assignment was in France, and it was like 2 weeks into my internship. Not even 2 weeks. It was 1 week. Like the first day I got there, they were like, you know, they showed me the building, showed me the photo engineering.
Yeah.
And then I go into the director of photography office, and he's like, hands me this envelope, and he's like, this is your first assignment. You're leaving on Saturday. We need your checking account number. We're putting this much money in. Here's your contact person. Here's your interpreter. Here's the story. You're leaving 3 days. Go.
Wait a minute. You're an intern, but you were given an assignment? You weren't like tagging along with somebody?
No. No. And that's when the editor... my editor said, our philosophy here is we throw you in the middle of the lake, and if you're good, you make it to shore, and here's your first assignment.
Holy cow. Now, you're young enough. This was probably digital by then, yes?
I mean, it was 1998, 2000, not, no.
No, it's film.
Yeah, film. And, you know, to some degree, it just depends on how dedicated you are. If you wanted to shoot film there, you still could.
Mm-hmm. So you said that your biggest lesson was problem solving and coming up with these stories where it might not be evident right away how to tell the story, and might not be visually rich off the bat. How do you do that?
I think one of the things that I learned pretty quickly is that to me, every great photograph starts with a moment. So, and how do you get moments? You just spend time with people. So I really put in my time. I would try to gain trust of the subject. I mean, this is, you know, kind of basic journalism 101, you know, you put your time in with your subject. You try to really get an understanding of who they are, what their life is about, and get intimate enough with them, photographically speaking, and to where you really start to see those visual moments. And that to me is really the barrier between snapshots or just kind of general surface photographs and then real moments.
Yet ironically, you're doing food photography, you're doing still life. There is no moment, right? Everything's frozen.
Well, I mean, yes and no. I mean, with the food, like the food beauties, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, that's pretty straightforward.
Right.
But then
the chefs and the cooking and everything, the prep, all of that's at the moment. That's photojournalism.
Everything around it, yeah. And a lot of the stories I do on location for Sever in other countries are, you know, it's like home cooks, you know, or it's a group of men in Lebanon who, you know, fled the war in Iraq and now cook together in their small little apartment in the bowels of you know, city. Things like that, where it's the moments, you know, are pretty real.
But even
and people's connection to food are, it's really a powerful thing.
But even our still lives still tell that story, like the crumbs and the light, you know, like, you know, it's morning because of the light coming through that the shade in that first shot, you know, that warm light with the grid like material. So it's easier, obviously, to tell stories with food out in the field, like you were just explaining. But if you're doing studio photography in studio, what are some tips that you can continue telling that story in a still life environment?
I think you always want food to feel really approachable. And one of the ways you do that with still life food is, I think you want to see crumbs. I think you want to see smudges and marks. You want to see dirty forks. You want to see a half-eaten plate. You kind of start with the beautiful plate and then you mess it up as you progress. So just like in anything, like, and if you're making a portrait, you're going to start with that great, what you think is the cleanest image. And then you're going to completely start to stretch your legs creatively and do some edgier stuff. And that's when I think you really start to tell the story of food and get people more engaged in seeing the food, you know. I mean, the idea is, especially with food beauties, is to inspire people enough to either want to eat it, make the recipe, turn the page, go out and get that right away, you know.
So food beauty is the still life, the beauty shot of food. But you're still doing the photojournalism around it. We've got some amazing images. There's one called Born into. Well, this is the food beauty, and by the way, yes, it's beautiful.
Yeah, I want to eat it.
this is a perfect example. See the wrapper? Somebody has been eating. See the crumbs? Somebody has been eating.
Yeah. So how do you make it look so artful and uncontrived? But I know you're. I mean, you must be like placing the crumbs and. How are you designing it? And is the stylist, how much are they involved with that process?
You know, I like to work pretty closely with a good stylist. And I'd like to think I spend a lot of time finding the right person that we have a pretty good relationship that we can really play off of each other and push those images to where they feel a little more elevated and engaged and inspired. But then sometimes, you know, I'm by myself in the field, like the one you just showed, that shrimp shot, that was me and the chef. That both those images right there, that was, you know, that came out of the kitchen from the chef's restaurant. Actually, this is in Los Gatos, close to where you guys are.
Yeah, Manresa is a great restaurant.
Fantastic.
Love it.
And his food's just beautiful. So it was me and David, the chef, you know, and on the patio, I had a diffuser, you know, bright shining afternoon light, diffused it, and his food just looked that good. It was that easy.
Interesting. So a diffuser is the only lighting on this.
Yeah, actually, all my food is naturally lit, all of it, 100%.
That's what you were saying too, Catherine. Yeah.
So is there a reason for that and why?
I think it makes the food feel a lot more real. Mm-hmm. It looks so much more appetizing. Mm-hmm. And I call it like it's more of an organic approach to seeing food. You know, it is how it really appears.
And how do you work within that boundary of being, you know, only having natural light?
Well, I mean, you know, I just did this studio shoot in New York and it was raining like all 3 days. So, you know, I'm pushing my camera to the max, you know, and I'm just trying to.
But you would agree with Catherine that daylight is the best the temperature, color temperature for this. Even if you were artificial lighting, you'd light for daylight.
Yeah, I would. I mean, there have been moments where I didn't have any option. It was like it was dark and the food came out and I just had to work with it and you wing it. And
so
you know,
what do
you
do in that situation?
You know, I'd try to find nice light in wherever I was at. If I had to, I'd set up lights and I'd make it look as like natural sunlight. You know,
these two images are kind of interesting because, and I want to ask you about composition. You like crumpled stuff in the background, I've noticed, which is great because you get some texture and some contrast in there. But on the left, you've got kind of a uniform depth of field, and on the right, you've definitely got a strong depth of field there. Uh-huh. Is there a reason you choose one over the other? Or
on the image on the left, so if you stripped away that parchment paper that was wrinkled, I think it, and then you'd have to have it on some surface that separated it.
Right.
So that's my first thought. I've got to separate that image from a background. So white felt really nice because I don't want to distract from those. This was a savory chocolate book, so it was all savory chocolate recipes. So this is chocolate dipped banana chips. So you want to separate that from the background, but you don't want the background to be too distracting.
Right.
So we put something in there that we felt was kind of organic, like you just unwrapped them from the store or something.
Yes.
And so I wanted enough depth of field that you saw the different textures that you could dip these banana chips in. And then the one on the right, I think those are truffles. For me, it was the pattern on that table was so beautiful, mm-hmm. and it added, mm-hmm. like those three small truffles are so simple. And so I really wanted the background again to add to the composition, but not distract enough. And I felt like the color played well off of it. So I felt like, you know, I could have a shallow depth of field and it still, you'd know what that was.
Yep.
And you would need to see all the detail in it to be able to be in the photograph.
It's nice to have these together because it really gives some insight into the thought process that you're using on two different images and the problem you're solving.
And that was from a cookbook, so it's a little different than like something I would shoot editorially for a magazine or editorial style for a client.
Because want this to look like what the person at home is going to get.
Right.
As opposed to some of these other issues. Whoops, scrolled away from us. Some of these other issues where what you're really looking for is showing how beautiful, is that Wolfgang Puck?
Yeah.
How beautiful Wolfgang Puck's presentation is. Yeah. No cook at home is going to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's great. Look at that
or
smile.
At least not succeed in the same way.
Yeah. Yeah, it ain't going to look like that when I make it.
So you like the natural light, but what about direction? I mean, where do you find, if there was a general rule?
It's the same. You said earlier in your introduction, it's the same as like if you're going to make a portrait. Side light's the most beautiful for sure. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But break the rules. I'll backlight stuff. I'll blow stuff out. It just depends on what my subject is, you know. I'm always trying to elevate the image, and I want to put you in that plate. I want to inspire you enough to want to eat that. I want you to feel what it feels like.
A shallow depth of field helps in that case. You really do feel like you're in that these dumplings are about to go into my mouth, damn it.
Good.
I mean, that you really get this sense of immediacy that a flat depth of field wouldn't give you. I mean,
yeah,
it really
yeah,
is
no,
great.
I hear you on that one.
Yeah.
So what lens choices, too? Do you typically settle on a certain millimeter for creating that?
You know, I shoot all my stories and food with one lens. One body and one lens.
Shocking.
I travel so much. I can't carry a lot of gear. And it makes no sense for me to be in a market in the middle of Mexico City with like four lenses and two bodies. And I'm going to get ripped off. I'm going to bring so much attention to myself. So if I just keep it really simple, I have one thing to think about. And that's just great composition and photography.
So your lens, let me guess. Are you Canon?
Yeah. You know the lens.
24-105.
It's got to be the kit lens, right?
Yeah. It's got to be the 24-105.
That's a great lens.
It is a great
lens.
You don't
need extra f-stop on that.
That's the only negative. It's a little slow, and gosh, you're shooting inside a lot. But
yeah, how do you deal with that you can only get on to f4?
Oh, I have never had a problem. I think I have a steady hand. I've shot really slow with that thing. It is awesome.
What's
I swear
the slowest
by that
you've shot, and it still comes out? Like, where's your comfort zone reached?
I've probably shot to a 13th at a 13th.
Wow.
You're a lot more steady than me.
And you don't mind going to a higher ISO, I think.
Not at all.
What yeah.
ISO I mean,
do
I won't go crazy high. Like,
you're not going to 32,000, but you'd do 6,400?
No. I won't go. I mean, you know, if I can control it, I won't go above 2,500.
Okay.
So that's where I settle at.
That makes
32
sense.
32 is
you're
where
get
it
grain.
Starts to really
get some
go
grain, yeah.
down quick.
Here's a beautiful shot side lit.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
Just gorgeous. And,
yeah, and that's this woman in Genoa. You know, Genoa is where...
Looks like pesto, baby.
Pesto was invented in Genoa. And so the story was, fly to Genoa, Penny, and, you know, we were doing a story on pesto and how it was invented. And so this is this old Italian woman in her country home, and the light's streaming through her kitchen window.
And that's
and
it.
I'm up on a bench, you know, photographing
you got
down.
The basilico, the pignoli, you got a little salt, a little garlic... A little olive oil, some Parmigiano Reggiano, and you're set.
That's it, yeah.
The best thing in the world is simple like that. It's so
beautiful. I mean, the composition is so beautiful.
It's beautiful.
It's so simple and clean.
Yeah.
I mean,
but there's a challenge because you have to get all those ingredients in.
I know.
You want to get her hands in. It's probably tempting to do a grid, you know.
How many shots are you taking to get this? Like, how many different perspectives are you working? You know, you settle on this down shot.
In this situation, like, I just let her cook, and I just kind of like I would in a, you know, my foundation's in photojournalism, so I kind of let people do their thing. I want them to forget about me.
Yeah.
And so I'm probably shooting her first. I'm this light was beautiful coming in, so
no
I tried to really show her in that kitchen because it was really pretty. But then once I saw her kind of putting out the basil and all her ingredients, immediately I was like, oh, I gotta hover. I gotta get above her.
Oh, I'm just, I mean, beautiful, beautiful stuff.
So what about styling tips for people that don't have the luxury of having a stylist? You know, what are some
tips?
Yeah.
I think one of the biggest mistakes a lot of young photographers make is I think they get way too close to the food. They'll get really detailed in there. I have a friend who's a food critic, and when she's making her food pictures, she'll just get really close. And I'm like, whoa, I can't even tell what that is.
Right.
So my first tip is always pull away. You want to be able to see a finished shape. People should be able to identify what it is. Sometimes people get too focused on the drip. Oh, I just want to show the ooze from the burger. And you don't know it's a burger, you know?
Yeah, but there's a hell of something oozing there, and it's not very appetizing. These are all you can really see. We know exactly what we're getting. And yet you're close. You are close enough so that you're intimate with the food, but you see what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels fairly compressed. I mean, are you shooting at like 80 or 100 or... Are you?
I probably hover somewhere 50 to 70.
Oh, okay.
But I try not to zoom. Like, I will change my body position. I just think that's good practice. I don't want to. I think it's a bad habit
it's
to
lazy.
Zoom.
Yeah.
I'm a big zoomer. Does that mean I'm lazy?
You're lazy.
Yes.
Move around. Move around. No, we're just teasing you. This is beautiful. Okay. Colors, composition. Really, really. Are you looking to make people hungry?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to evoke an emotion. You know, I think that's what
emotion.
Every great.
Yeah.
That's what every good photograph does.
Yeah.
So tell us about this transition from the photojournalist world.
Before you do,
yes.
Let's take a break, and we will. I want to find out about that.
Leo
Penny.
Keeps us on track.
Well,
I
have commercials.
That's a scary thought, isn't it?
but yeah, that is a scary thought. If I'm keeping you on track, you're in trouble. Penny De Los Santos is here. She is a contributing editor of photography at Saveur magazine, but a photojournalist. In fact, I have a series of photos born in a cell block. I want to ask you about that because those look really interesting. As well. Some really, really neat stuff there. You're watching Twit Photo with Catherine Hall. We are brought to you today by Ford Motor Company. If I could take a picture of my Mustang, it would evoke what emotion? Oh, joy, excitement, thrilling energy.
I was going to say thrilling.
Thrilling. It is. It's fun. And I think this is what Ford is really attempting to do with all of its motor cars, is bring the fun back into driving, to connect you in your car to the, of course, the safety first, right? We got to keep our hands on the wheel and our eyes on the road, but not. And by the way, that was one of the great things. Alan Mulally, who's the CEO of Ford, I asked him, Alan, you know, how far off are these cars that drive themselves? And he said, Leo, I think people like to drive far too much for us to make a car that you do not drive. They are all about the fun, the thrill, the pleasure of driving. And yet giving you these high-end electronics features in the cabin. You know, he was an engineer, a designer for Boeing, and did the 777 cockpit. And you almost feel like you're in an airplane cockpit when you get into your Ford. Things like the Ford Sync with My Ford Touch. Amazing. Let you talk to your car. And I often talk about the fact you could, say, play songs or get the temperature, get the movie times in the nearest gasoline station. But really, let's face it. Why do you use it most of all? It's the GPS. It's the directions. And this is the best GPS in any auto I've ever driven. Turn-by-turn directions. That with the My Ford Touch, you get directional arrows behind the wheel on the little screens there. So you don't even have to look down at the GPS. You just know. Of course, they're talking to you, too. But you just know where you're going. Things like being able to tie it in. You can log into your account. They call it Sync Traffic Directions and Information Systems. You have a website where you log in. You can store things there, like you're using Google Maps or MapQuest on your computer at home, and you send it to your account. You save it online, and from there, you can fetch it on your Ford Sync. So you can say, give me the directions, that place I was talking about, and it will pop up and send you there. They now have 40 million business addresses in there, including telephone numbers. You can say, call that business as you're on your way. Turn-by-turn directions, of course. There's an app, a free app in the App Store for iPhones and Android phones that give you mobile access to your traffic directions and the information systems account. You can even have it send you traffic alerts to your phone. So if you're sitting at work and you have your traditional route, it will say, hey, Leo, you better get out there because the traffic's getting worse, that kind of thing.
You always do that, don't you?
I you know what? I don't have a commute anymore. Thank goodness.
Oh, see, if it takes longer, I would rather
you want to
go around
traffic. Exactly.
Traffic. I can't.
It will do that.
So
it'll route you around traffic. Here's what you do. Go to Ford.com/technology. The website there has everything about all of these amazing technologies Alan and his crew are building into the modern Fords. But the best way to do this, go test drive that 2012 Ford Focus. Go test drive a Ford. Drive one today at a Ford dealer near you, and you will see why I have become a Ford fanatic.
Yeah,
I have.
You
it's
are.
The fun of driving.
You're making me want one.
You should want one. What are you driving? You're driving that van. You want?
Drive a van.
You want, as a photographer? I'm not kidding. Ford Flex. Just go look at the Ford Flex. I'm not kidding.
I'll do it for you.
First of all, it's like a luxury vehicle, but it's big. Lots of space. So you go, all your gear can go in there. Great for traveling. They even have the. We had a Flex. We rented a Flex that had a cooler, built-in refrigerators for the passengers.
That's cool.
Yeah. Anyway.
That's good for shoots.
Yes. Because you need to have a couple of, you know, you beverages sandwiches. Waiting, sandwiches, that kind of thing. We were talking to Penny De Los Santos. She is a photographer for Sever, photojournalist, food photographer extraordinaire. But tell me about this. I'm sorry. You had a question that I interrupted.
I was just going to say, it's obvious to me her work has, her photojournalistic background is quite evident.
Yes. Even in food photo.
Yeah, in her food photography. I think that's one of the things that makes her unique as a food photographer.
Yeah.
Can you explain sort of your journey from the photojournalist to the food world and how your photojournalism allows you to create unique imagery?
Yeah. You know, I started in newspapers. I worked at the San Jose Mercury News, really close to where
great
you guys are.
Great newspaper.
Yeah, I love the Merc.
What years were you at the Merc?
1999 to 2004.
Oh, you got to cover the whole dot-com bust, all that stuff. That was a great time to be.
I was there when it was the richest newspaper in
that's
the country.
Right.
Wow.
And it quickly
Yeah,
with Dan Gilmore and company. That's a great newspaper. What a great newspaper.
Yeah. I learned a ton there.
I bet.
So then I left there and started freelancing for magazines mostly. And one of my editors moved from the Geographic and started working at a food magazine. And from there, he was just throwing me assignments. My first assignment was for them, for Sever, was to Chile and Peru.
Well, that's not so bad.
Yeah.
No, it was great.
Because I would say, if you're a photojournalist, getting an assignment to be a food photographer, it must have sounded like, oh, my God, I'm going to be sitting in a studio taking pictures of, you know, hamburgers. That sounds like a horrible life.
Yeah, to switch from that to
But
that.
Now you're going to Chile and Peru.
Right.
I went to Peru, only eat Chilean food because it's much better than the Peruvian food. Or is it vice versa? No, I can't remember. Which did you like?
Which did you like?
The Peruvian food or the Chilean food?
You know, Chilean food, I don't know that they really have their own food.
I think that's what it was. They said have the Peruvian food in Chile.
Yeah.
All I remember is a lot of pisco sours.
Peruvian food's really good.
Peruvian food's amazing.
That was what it was, yeah.
Yeah. Chileans make great food, but it's not really Chilean food.
It's not their food.
Yeah. It's really strange.
That is weird.
It's really weird. I didn't know that. But I knew the magazine, and I knew they did mostly it was travel and food culture. And so when my editor called me, he said, look, it's everything you're already doing. It's about place. It's about people. It's about culture. But there's an element of food, and we can talk you through that. So
do not fear the food.
Yeah. So they threw you in the lake again.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. And it was, I mean, I loved it. It was a wine story in Chile, which is,
just got
you know,
better.
a great country to cut.
Wonderful
know,
wine.
Photograph wine yeah. in. And so with the leading winemaker, and so I quickly realized that, oh my God, these assignments are amazing. You know, you stay in really nice hotels. You're in kind of like the best restaurants with having the most amazing meals. It was not the experience I was having, you know, in prisons or.
Right. I do love your culture of food photos. And all of this is on Penny's website, by the way. She's been very generous with putting a lot of pictures up in her portfolio. But the culture of food I find great. These images are just – this is a guy going in with a lamb under its arm into the sous chefs working so intensely focused on what they're doing.
That's actually at Manresa. Have you guys been there?
I have. Love it.
Great place.
Love it. We'll have to go there, Catherine.
I have never been.
Yeah. I don't know what the food culture risk. This is a food cart.
That's in L.A., yeah. I did a whole story on Los Angeles and the food culture there.
Yeah. And shucking oysters.
Yeah.
Those guys are nuts. That is a tough job, let me tell you. Look at that. I love chefs. They are just so... They're artists. It's an artist covering an artist.
Totally.
Yeah.
So tell us about the connection of your sort of passion for culture and your passion for food. You've once said that it's sort of a marriage between those two passions. How do those connect and create unique imagery?
Well, for me, it was a natural progression. I quickly realized on that first assignment in Chile that food was telling a story. It's about history. You know, you see foodways and you understand pretty quickly how foods migrated across the country, across the world to different Americas. So that was pretty powerful. I'm really inspired by stories. That's why I became a photographer. I love to photograph stories. So
I love it that you're not a food snob too. I love the Philly cheesesteak, the burgers and fries.
The dirtier, the better.
The world is opening up to that.
Well, this is a good example because, you know, I think a lot of times we think, especially those of us who are doing food spotting and stuff, you've got to snap the picture before you touch it, which, by the way, drives me crazy.
Yeah.
You got to take that picture. And you always, you get it. There's a bite out of it. As you said, there's crumbs on the floor. There's ketchup on the fries. But isn't that much more appetizing that way?
Oh, man. I mean, when you think about it, when you're in a restaurant, you're usually seeing food as it's being eaten, and that's what gets you wanting it.
I am so salivating now, I'll tell you. Let me show you this cheese. By the way, that is a hoot.
That's this guy, this chef in Los Angeles who does political messages on his plate. It was really amazing.
Oh, interesting. So that's the plate.
Really, this is an anti-immigration kind of statement. And so that's a Chile Rano. It's a kind of high-end white tablecloth Mexican restaurant.
Interesting.
Really nouvelle cuisine. It was pretty special.
Wow. This one I love. This makes me – I know Colin, in our who is from Philly, is looking at this going, yeah, baby. Is that in Philadelphia? Where is that?
Yeah, Philly. That's – what is Gino and
Gino.
The famous –
Yeah, Gino and Carlo. Yeah, that's it. That's the one.
Yeah, I spent like I don't know how many hours at between those two places just trying to get a photograph that kind of talked about how insane it was. I've never seen that much meat on a griddle.
And they're chopping and they're slicing and you get all the steam coming off of it. Awesome.
I think one of the things that we keep seeing is this depth that her work has, you know. And you said to me that often you shoot beyond the assignment. And I think that's a really good message for photographers, young photographers, to know the magazine may not, or the job assignment or whatever, may not know how long it takes to actually accomplish something.
Right.
Can you elaborate on that and explain how depth has played a role in your photography?
Yeah. I spend a lot of time with subjects. And oftentimes, you know, the editor will say, yeah, we're just going to send you to this place for 2 or 3 days. But what I find is, you know, oftentimes it takes another day or two longer to really get in with your subjects and build rapport and find those moments. So I oftentimes will shoot beyond the assignment. So I'm not trying to just fulfill the assignment. I really want to make pictures. You know,
right.
I what's one of the advantages to working for Sevier is, you know, not only do I get to photograph great stories, but I'm in amazing countries, and so I go to Greece again and photograph, you know, that country around food. It's, I don't know, but I'm going to take my time to really connect with my subject and make those pictures, try to find those moments, show the depth of a place. It oftentimes isn't in the 2 or 3 day period that I'm assigned.
It's interesting because food really is an important part of culture. It's a central part of culture in our lives. And if even you just shoot people eating and making and sharing food, you're really capturing the spirit of a country and of a people. Absolutely.
Definitely. So how are you getting, you know, you're obviously time is one of the ingredients in creating that sort of intimacy and depth. How else are you, you know, tips for getting sort of inside these people's lives? Because that's the thing I see with your work is you're really, they're ignoring you. For the most part, they're like, it feels
they're busy
very,
doing their work here.
It feels
yeah.
very, I mean, I don't know if it is contrived, but it feels very uncontrived.
You know, these are 100% organic moments. Mm-hmm. None of them are curated at all. I spend a lot of time with my subjects and I search, you know, and that goes back to just working. What I feel like when, you know, one of my major kind of training grounds with National Geographic was just putting your time in with subjects and searching, really, mm-hmm. really searching and really trying to tell the story. So I'm changing my perspective constantly. I'm going up, I'm going down, I'm moving around, I'm listening and I'm looking more than I'm talking for sure. I'm behind the camera and I'm just thinking about the other side of the camera. And the other thing I do a ton is I'll ask some questions, but if they'll let me, I will stay with them from dawn till dusk. a lot of people don't, you know, they think, oh, you're just here for a food story. You're just going to photograph my family meal. But really, I'll show up 8 hours before that meal is served and just really try to get the essence of what it means for your family to gather and what that looks like. Mm. I really want people to connect with that place. And the only way I can do that is if I myself take the time to figure out what it is that makes that connection for people.
Is that unusual? Because that seems like that would be unusual.
I think so, but I think that there is a, I don't think I'm the only photographer that puts a lot of time in with their subjects to try to really get the essence and the depth and the moment of who that what that subject is, you know. I think it just comes down to how bad do you want it.
You know, it strikes me Michelangelo was one of the first food photographers.
That's interesting.
Many of these images remind me of the Last Supper. There's that moment, and it's about, and there's things happening.
That's
these are very last, feel like the Last Supper, very much that we are eating. Very interesting. This one I just love, that family. And I love this one more than I love it to death.
This is one of my favorite ones, actually. Yeah,
look at that.
This wasn't even the assignment. It was a fashion show.
Oh my gosh.
This was, and so these are all the hair and makeup artists. And they had been on their feet and doing hair and makeup in Los Angeles for probably 6 hours. And finally, when their lunch came, I was like, oh, there's my photo. And I ran to like where they were.
Oh my God, it's hilarious.
Oh, I love it. Do you ever use a tripod?
No, never.
Even for the stills?
Nothing. No. Never. No way. I got to be able to move around the food.
You're making it so simple on us. See, this is what normally this show I end up wanting to buy all this gear. You're using a 5D Mark II and a 24-105 lens. You're done.
Really good camera bag.
Okay, tell us about your camera bag then. I got to have something I want to buy. Actually, this show is all about me buying cheesesteaks and chiles.
This is the worst. Yeah, exactly.
This is the show where you'll buy a plane ticket and fly to like
Mexico. I'm on my way. Yes.
Market. Yeah.
What is the best food city in the world?
Gosh,
pick one.
I think there's a handful. I'd say in the U.S.?
In the world.
In the world. U.S.
Start with the U.S. You can pick as many as you want. You don't have to pick one.
Okay, in the U.S., I'd say L.A. I'm going to get hate mail for this
one. No kidding.
L.A., New York, for sure. And there's not one or the other, but they're together. L.A., okay. New York. I think there are other great cities, but if you're going to do one, like you could really explode in either of those cities easily.
Yes.
And New York for Chinatown, and L.A.
Right.
for completely different reasons. And New York for different reasons, too. In the world, I'd say Mexico City, hands down.
Really?
Is one of the top.
Interesting. I wouldn't have known that. Why?
I don't think that there's any other country that has the street food and the street food culture like they do.
Street food is so good, but you get so scared eating it. I get so nervous. But I want to eat it all the time because
India would be great too, but Mexico City, regionally it changes. You're never going to find the same foods.
Isn't that interesting?
You know, regionally it's amazing. And then I'd say India for sure for the same reasons. I think the grimier, the dirtier, the better. Like I'm a photographer. I'm looking for really interesting visual moments. I want to see things I haven't seen before. So those two countries are definitely going to give me that.
Okay, so LA and New York, two like sort of dive bar, very accessible restaurants that people should check out.
Oh, in either city?
Yeah.
That's tough. Now that I will get hate mail.
We can move past that.
No hate mail. Although everybody in San Francisco is saying, Penny, what did we do? What did we do to hurt you?
San Francisco is great too. I mean, Chinatown in San Francisco is amazing. But so. I mean, I want to see life on the streets.
Yeah.
You know, San Francisco has beautiful food. I mean, the market there is amazing, right? But it's different.
It is. Yeah. I know what you're saying.
New York is very much life.
So it sounds like you like street vendors, food trucks, dive greasy spoons.
I want to see people getting into food. I don't want it to be white tablecloth and pretty and organic and local.
You know, that's my problem. Cool. I always take pictures of those, you know, French laundry meals. They're not nearly as photogenic as the Denny's down the street. I love it.
Or, you know, the mom and pop shop, you know, down in the wherever.
There's got to be mom and pop shops in Petaluma.
Oh, there are, definitely.
I can feel it.
You know, the best burger in town is Mike's at the Yard. It's at the auction yard where they auction off the steers and the cattle to the slaughterhouses.
Oh, wow.
It's Mike's at the Yard.
That's probably super fresh.
You want gritty and real. It's very real. They're famous. They smoke their own pastrami or cook their own pastrami. Oh. And the burgers are incredible. So there you go. There's Pete's Henny Penny also, which is, and you're right, you don't want to go to a chain. You want to go to Pete's Henny Penny. It's open 24 hours. The ranchers are eating there. And they have their own steers. They have their own beef.
Wow, so. Leo, you sound like a food photographer.
No, I'm just a fat man. But you know what? You're making me want to be a food photographer.
Oh, my gosh.
So ask, one of the things I noticed in great, we talked a little bit about light, but what about, I noticed in some of your shots, reflections, specular highlights, gleams, glitters. That often is something people are going for. They want to see on a gravy. They want to see the reflections on the gravy. Do you consider that? Do you look for that? Doesn't seem
yes
like you
no.
do.
I mean, gravy can, well, yeah, I'm always looking for that. Anything that makes it seem that much more appetizing or appealing, for sure.
Right.
For sure. But gravy can also die on you really quick. So, you know, you have them hold the gravy. Hold the gravy until you're ready for it.
It doesn't stay good looking.
Yeah, it dies.
It dies.
Meaning that it's only going to look good for about 5 frames, and then you're going to have to replate the whole thing and rebuild that.
That's why the food stylist will spray it with mineral oil and stuff just to keep it glistening. Otherwise, it's just...
So what about photographers that are just, like, they're just getting into food and they want to start playing?
Yeah,
what
give
are
some tips.
Easy,
yeah.
What are some easy types of food to get started with?
Turkey's
avoid
easy.
Gravy.
Turkey always
yeah,
looks
good. Yeah,
what
about Thanksgiving? Like, what can people focus on during the holidays coming up?
I think you should photograph the table. And not the table settings, but like people like all eating.
Yeah.
Like, so what I would do is I'd sit across from either the most interesting looking people or the people who are going to not forget. They're going to forget you're there.
Great
so you want to sit across from people that are going to just ignore you,
yep.
basically.
Yep.
Or they look really interesting. Like maybe they have a great hat on or their hair is totally weird. I don't know. I don't know who your family is. But sit across from those people.
Because I'm going to do this, I'm going to my dad's for Thanksgiving, and a whole big family. You know, there'll be 20 people there, so this is good. I'm listening.
Oh,
here.
Is this a challenge, Leo? Will you really do this?
Yeah,
I'll do it too.
Okay.
And then
you going to big family Thanksgiving, or what are you doing?
We're
going to
have one at our house.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right. So sit across from the person in the funny hat, or the big talker, or the person who will forget you're taking pictures, who's just going to be doing stuff.
Right. Well, just think about who's the most interesting, visually interesting person here and who's going to make a great photograph. So it's the same principles of, you know, just looking for great pictures. So sit across from those people, keep your camera really close, and just quietly make your pictures. But I'd also, you know, I don't know if you do buffet style or if plates get passed, you want to make sure, like if they're making that decision, make sure they put the food on the table and you get like people are passing stuff. That's always a great photo. Mm. And then you start getting hands reaching. Mm-hmm. And so then you're starting
then
to
really
get
forget about you.
You're going for the action shots.
Totally going to forget about you. And then what you want to do is, so yeah, eventually you're going to sit down and be a part of that experience, but you really want to be up above them to kind of in their face as those, everything's getting passed. And so you really want to put yourself in that place.
Why do I think Penny eats before she goes to Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I know. But wait, quick question. What about, what if you're eating at like 5 or 6 o'clock and it's dark and you're using to use natural light? What would you do in that situation?
Well, I'm going to be looking for the moment. I'm not going to be looking for the beautiful food shot.
Right.
And if I am, I've already made that. I made that early in the day. The turkey is probably done.
Right.
You know, it needs to rest for, 30 minutes to an hour.
Perfect time to take pictures of it, yeah.
So you can make that photograph ahead of time. And then two, you know, really when the meal's served, the photograph that you're looking for is people's connection to the food. So it's about relationships and moment and place. So that, to me, is the harder photograph. That's one of the reasons I love shooting food is what's around the food, not necessarily what's on the plate. Like I'm always telling people, look up from the plate and really see the connections. Why are people coming together? What is it about food that brings people together? That to me is food photography.
Bing Bong says in our chat room, if Penny sits across from you at Thanksgiving, you're the character.
That's awesome. Like, no, I love that because most people are like, ooh, who am I going to sit to do? She's just like, I want to sit next to the most
interesting. Tell us about this series, Born into Cell Blocks?
That is a piece I did. It's on women who, it's on a prison in what is now the most dangerous city in the world. It's right on the border, on the Mexican borderlands where all this drug violence is happening.
Yeah.
You're seeing that in the news all the time.
Right.
And it's a prison in that town, and they actually allow women to keep their children with them while they serve their time. And so I got access to the prison, and it did the story. Originally, it was a personal project, and then later, Mother Jones Magazine sent me back on assignment. And that's a conjugal visit. That image. So you know, I think you paid like some ridiculous fee to get a conjugal visit. So the woman on the left is serving time, and that's her boyfriend.
Wow.
And then you know they have their cooler. They get this little room. They can spend the night there together. But so it's a co-ed prison, and women are on one side and men are on the other. It's one of the most violent places I've ever... It's very unsafe.
You have to tell us about... Because it's one of the things she talks about when you're emerging photographers. Unfortunately, you have to take a lot of risks. And this is one situation where you did. Explain how you got into the prison.
So I got to this... I borrowed access from... Originally, I went... Like, I had an uncle, a relative who was a judge in this town, and he helped me get access the first time. And then when I went back for Mother Jones, I couldn't get access. Like, they just turned me down left and right. And then I actually found a journalist who was a Mexican journalist, had won the equivalent to the Pulitzer in Mexico, and he went with me to meet the warden and just... No way, you can't come in, forget about it. So then I called a friend of mine who's a writer for Texas Monthly Magazine, and she writes about border issues. And she said, you know what, my friend owns the newspaper in Nuevo Laredo. Call him. He might be able to get you in. So I call this man, and he's like, meet me at this bar at 10 o'clock p.m. So I walk into this bar. I'm with an assistant. I walk into this bar, and we're like the only two women to open this bar door. It's a gambling bar. I didn't know this at the time. Keep in mind, like, it's a very dangerous time to be in that city, period. I walk into this bar, all heads turn. We're like, it was like you could hear the record scratch, you know, it was like, who are these people? We sit down, and this man just starts pouring us tequila after tequila, and at some point I'm, you know, I need to let it come up organically. You know, this is what I'm trying to do. And eventually he's like, why do you want to go to the prison? And I told him, well, there's this story. I worked on it before. I just want to finish it. And I've been commissioned by this magazine to go back. And so I told him, and he's like, well, look, if you go, you can't, you that can only be your story. You can't, you don't want to go any other direction with the story, because you don't want to mess with these people. Cause it's this prison is ran entirely by the inmates, 100%. And so, like, I don't know what time it was. It was early in the morning at that point. And he's like, I can get you in. Where are you staying? What hotel are you at? So I told him my hotel room. And then the next morning I got a phone call from the warden. And he was just like, come. We're here.
Wow.
The prison's open for you. Come immediately. And I was just like, what? I didn't ask too many questions.
I guess not.
Just show up.
Yeah.
Quickly.
And you don't want to mess around.
Do you engage? Are you engaging with the people at all, or just taking pictures silently?
I'm totally engaging. The only reason I had an assistant with me was because everybody in there wanted to talk to me. Can you hand this note to my husband? Can you do this? Everybody wanted to tell me their story, why they weren't supposed to be there.
Yeah.
And so the assistant was her job, 100%, to listen to those people so that I could just completely focus on making pictures.
Wow.
Interesting.
So it was intense.
Yeah. No kidding.
I mean, there's this common theme. I see patience as being a really common theme with you, and whether it's capturing the shot within a story, staying with the subjects for longer, whether it's waiting for access. How have patience and instinct played roles in other ways in your photography career?
Oh, I think, well, waiting for moments is the most important thing. You know, you just always be calm and stay centered and wait and anticipate. And I think instincts, like that's at the, I think as a photographer, we oftentimes, at least I used to kind of not really hear, you know, you hear those little, there's some interesting light there. What's that about? And you don't oftentimes stop to really think, what is that? And you just walk past it. So now what I've started to do is, and it's taken years to just really listen to those instincts and realize that, wait a minute, it's the subtleties. And that's kind of where my photos really are. That's where they are. That's where I think you're starting to make unique pictures and you're starting to really see the nuances in life. At least that's what I react to in great photography. When I think about all the masters that I love in photography, yeah, you can have this big, glorious, beautiful lit moment, but it's the nuances in a photograph that really transport you. That's my goal. That's what I'm trying to do. I think that's when you really start to have a voice in your seeing, you know, and that's what makes photography unique for every single person, is because we all react differently to different things.
We're talking to Penny de los Santos, pennydelosantos.com, to see the images. We're going to get her tips. We have three tips from Penny. We've actually talked about most of these, but we'll kind of encapsulate them in just a second. Just a reminder, I'm going to do this quickly. Netflix, you're not already a member? Join Netflix. It's free for 30 days, netflix.com/twit. Streams to everything, your iPad, your iPhone, your Android phone, your Android tablet, your computer, your Xbox 360, your PlayStation 3. A lot of TVs now and Blu-ray players. I know if you're into photography and photojournalism, the documentaries on Netflix streaming are amazing. $7.99 a month for unlimited. Just take a look at it. And I know you're already a member, so tell a friend. This Thanksgiving, make it your goal. Tell two people at Thanksgiving that they can try this free for 30 days, netflix.com/twit. Enough said. Don't have to go into great detail. You understand. Just do it. All right. Tip number one, you already said this, Penny. Shoot beyond every assignment. The best pictures of all are the ones where you're kind of freelancing. Like that great picture of the photo of the makeup artists.
Right. Yeah, always. I think you get the assignment. That's great, but you got to shoot beyond it. Like, I didn't become a photographer to make a lot of money. I tell people this all the time. I don't know if either of you thought about this, but I never thought about, oh, I'm going to be a photographer because I'm going to make a lot of money. No. It was never about that.
Not why you become a photographer.
It's not. You become a photographer. You become a photographer because you want to make great pictures.
Right.
So how do you do that? You think beyond the assignment. You have to, because honestly, an editor in an office in New York City is not seeing what you're seeing. And
right.
So that's your job. You know, they're not going to get that on day three, when you wake up in the morning and the rancher is herding 3,000 sheep across a pass and you're supposed to be on a plane 2 hours later, that's when your photograph happens. You know, you just do it and you change your ticket and you apologize later.
Good for you. What a great shot.
Oh, I love this.
I can hear them
favorites.
Going, meh. That shot?
Yeah, because from a cultural standpoint, it really gives you a feeling.
Yeah.
And that goes back to telling the story.
This rancher, it took, you know, it was this story on this Idaho sheep rancher. And this was the last day. And finally, after 3 days of just trying to help him understand, you know, I really want to see these sheep in action. And when he did show them to me, it was like 12 p.m., you know, bright light, you know, across the path. Was horrible shadows. I was like, oh, this is, you're killing me. And I know they're moving these sheep at the break of dawn. I know they're doing stuff. I know they are. He wasn't giving that to me. And I was finally on the last day, you know, I get this small detail from him that, oh, well, these sheep herders are going to start moving at like 5 a.m. And I was like, I'm there. We're going.
They thought she'll never get up.
She'll never get up. I know.
She'll never get up.
Just slide this one right by her.
I think the best photographers get up before the sun rises.
You have to.
Yeah.
You show up hours before the moment happens.
Yep.
You have to.
Yep. That seems to happen again and again.
Yeah.
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 Tip two, find your point of departure. What do you mean by that?
I mean that you really have to figure out what it is you want to say in your photographs. For me, it's about really connecting with the subject and helping people to connect with that subject. So that means putting people in a place that they've never been and helping them feel that moment. So what is your point of departure? What are you trying to say with your pictures? You know, what do you want to show people? What is it? How do you want to impact people with your photographs? I think you got to be, it's got to be better than making a pretty picture. There's something you want to say.
And yet this is a very pretty picture because of the colors, the composition, but there's clearly a story.
Yeah. And I think a lot of photographers are just, you know, oh, I just want to make great pictures. And I said that earlier, but you at some point, and I learned this, you know, after years, that you really start to develop a style when you figure out what it is you're trying to say.
Is it different for every moment and picture, or do you have a thread that goes through your life that you're trying to say?
I'd like to think it's a little of both, but I think there's definitely a common thread.
What is the common thread for your pictures?
I think it's about human connection. What is it that puts us in a place? Why is it that, why should I care? And how can I help people see this place in a way that they have never seen it? And what is it how am I interjecting my own voice in that place? You know, as a photographer, there's no way you're objective. I mean, we say that as journalists, but it's impossible.
Right. You're an artist. Finally, spend time with your subject. It doesn't happen in the first 5 minutes, obviously. Look at these girls. Oh, is this a quinceañeros?
Quinceañera. This was a piece I did for National Geographic. Yeah, I spent days getting access to, well, actually probably more like weeks finding this scenario, and then days making sure I got access, and then several, I don't know how many hours I spent with them. Probably was with them from the beginning of their day till way into the evening. And they're waiting for their dates to pick them up. They're twin sisters.
Oh my goodness! Look at that! Look at those poofy dresses. It's their 15th birthday. You have to wear a crown.
Yeah.
And you have to wear a poofy dress.
Pink's
wonderful, wonderful image.
Pink's always good.
And the hopefulness of the one on the right. And she's looking at her sister, and she's kind of doubtful. There really is
I think they were grumpy because their dates were late.
Yeah, there's a story there. Yeah, love it. Website is pennydelosantos.com. I know Catherine has 3 pages of questions, and I've interrupted all of them.
No. Today was great.
It's
better to just run with it. These are just backup.
And I want to go have lunch, and this is what I'm going to eat.
Oh, there you go. Hey, before we sign off, can you give some tips for young photographers?
Just getting started?
Just getting started with the food world. Or photographers that may, like myself, that have been shooting forever.
How about an old photographer who still doesn't know what the hell he's doing?
How about a person that doesn't know how to shoot food?
I think you should find mentors. Try to find somebody in the photo world or beyond that inspires you and makes you want to be better. Identify who those people are. And
who is your mentor? Do you have somebody that you think of as like
one of her mentors? And she put shoes on one of her mentors.
Oh, I did, yeah. We talked about that. I actually, when I was beginning my career, I was assisting photographers in New York City, and I had a weekend job. I was really poor, and I had a weekend job at this really well-known sporting good place, and my claim to fame is I sold hiking boots to Susan Sontag and Annie Leibovitz.
Oh, you got to touch Annie Leibovitz's feet.
They were on their way. They were on their way to an assignment in East Africa or something.
Wow.
That's not nice.
Yeah, so I touched Annie's feet.
That'd be pretty great.
I would have bowed down, too.
Weird.
The best part, I think, too, is like normally if someone huge comes in, everyone would be scrambling for that customer. But like she's the only one that would even know or care who they were, probably.
Right.
So everybody was supporting her in this.
Yeah.
You want to take a picture of her? Go right ahead.
Right.
Yeah.
Are these the favorites? Because we had some favorites.
Oh, no. I think we're...
Is that it? Is that one of the favorites? I've lost track of where I am now. Let me make sure. Here it is. Penny's favorites. Here's two of Penny's favorites. We always ask our photographers to pick two of your favorite pictures and tell us the story behind it. Where is this, first of all?
This is in Bahia, Brazil. And this was a story I did on tropical fruits.
That's an ugali fruit.
So I went to...
Isn't it?
It's an amazing assignment. No, the one in the foreground is papaya.
Papaya, okay.
Right?
Fruit just tastes different in Brazil.
Yeah. I love the colors in this and the movement and the action. And then a wonderful meal. sitting on a plastic, on the ground on
this plastic tablecloth. This was an assignment I did in Beirut. This is on Iraqi refugees.
Wow.
And
This
was, the magazine sends me on a food story during Ramadan.
Oh, perfect. A fast, the fast period.
Oh my gosh, are you kidding?
But they can eat at night, right?
I'm serious. It was great. I was like, wow, I have one meal to photograph. This is great.
And it's at night.
And, and it's at night, right? And I'm supposed to be using natural light. It's a group of men who all fled the war in Iraq.
Wow.
And they fled to Beirut, to Lebanon. And they're seeking asylum. A lot of them, in this particular photo, were actually getting asylum in the U.S. But they're existing in the bowels of Lebanon in Beirut. And we weren't allowed to be with them in daylight. And we had to be very careful, because if they were associated with us as Westerners as journalists, they would be deported immediately. And then us, we would be detained. So
right.
It was really a sensitive story. And so I only had one meal I was able to actually photograph them. And so they spent all day cooking, and I'm in their little tiny apartment, you know, photographing them, putting my time in, just getting to know them as best as I can. We don't speak the same language, so I had an interpreter. And so finally, I hear the call to prayer in the neighborhood, and I was like, okay, cool, the time is coming. They start, you know, opening up trash bags and putting them on the floor, and they're setting this beautiful table. And I'm like, okay, cool, I've already thought about my shot. You know, I'm going to get up high. I'm going to see all of them sitting around the table. It's going to be great. They're starting to bring out the food. And then all of a sudden, the electricity in the entire area just goes out.
Oh, no.
Completely goes black. And I can't strobe, because if they see strobes or flashes from their windows,
right.
I mean, someone that's will bad. Be at their door and step.
Yeah.
Like, that's weird activity, what's going
right.
on. So I couldn't do that. So I was like, oh, crap, you know, what am I going to do? It's dark. It was pitch black. So then all of a sudden, one of the men comes out with candles and starts lighting them up on this
perfect
on their table. And there was my moment, you know, and I shot this. This was a slow shutter. You can see the movement in it. But it was more of an intimate photograph than I ever would have made had I had those lights on.
And I like the
movement.
Yeah. Is this on the 24-105, or did you have a faster lens for this?
No, this is definitely 24-105.
Amazing. Okay, I'm throwing away all my lenses. I didn't know you do Instagram.
Oh, I'm hardcore into it.
What's your Instagram handle?
It's my name.
I'm going to start following you. That's awesome.
I'm like deep into Instagram. It's a huge inspiration for me. I think that there's some great photographers on Instagram.
About the Canon 5D Mark II and all the stuff. You use an iPhone to take pictures.
I'm a big time Instagram user. I think Instagram is one of the most inspiring places for photography right now.
I
can't
agree
tell
with you.
I look at that every day, and I'm inspired. I think it's a wonderful resource for photographers to just kind of stretch their eyes and look at great pictures, and then go out and make their own pictures.
And do you only post iPhone pictures on here, or are these all kinds?
These are 100% iPhone photographs.
Good on you.
I think you have to be authentic. I think it's fake when
well,
you start.
Well, plenty of people put DSLR photos on there.
Like
it makes me mad. And
I know, it's crazy. I realize that. Yeah,
it's not part of that culture.
No, this is
about creating.
Yeah.
You know.
So, and I notice you do a lot of black and white. How do you do that? What do you use a particular kind of filter?
I'm putting it in Picture Show.
And
so for me with Instagram, in the beginning I was really exploring all the filters, but then I realized pretty quickly that
they're not so good.
It's all about the moment and composition for me. So I really try to just look for nice moments. And you know what it is? It's a way of stretching your eye as a photographer. So it's another way of practicing.
Yeah.
If you're serious about growing as a photographer, God, using the iPhone and Instagram is a wonderful way to get some wonderful seeing in and just practice your craft.
Well, I find I always have the iPhone with me. So what it teaches me to do is constantly be looking for pictures.
For photos. That's very true.
Absolutely,
exercising your mind in that way.
Yeah. Really neat stuff.
So what was your handle? Oh, so you can see it. Penny DeSantis.
Yep.
And then your Twitter is the same?
It's the same with one S because, you know, Twitter regulates. They restrict you on how many letters you can have in your handle. So you take one of the S's out in the middle for
very
De Los
confusing.
Santos.
De Los Santos.
Yeah.
And then also she has a great blog as well.
Which is on, and let's not forget Google Plus as well. You use a lot of Google Plus.
She's on my favorite.
If you want to see the behind the scenes stuff, like here's your stylist page working on an ice
She's
cream.
She's making the ice cream look edible.
To melt
edible.
It.
Yummy.
To melt it. What food stylist does that? She's melting it, folks.
Hey, Penny, is having a food stylist is almost as important as having a makeup artist?
Yes,
it's a makeup artist for food.
Yeah.
Maybe even more important. Yeah, no, absolutely. Hands down, very important.
I love the name on this, Third Date. I know exactly what you mean, Penny.
Doesn't she have great... I was telling her yesterday, all her captions are great.
Thank goodness the iPhone's a pretty decent camera.
Yeah. It's awesome.
It's good for street photography anyway.
Yeah.
Love it. So nice to meet you, Penny. Thank you. Very inspiring stuff. I thought food photographer. Oh, this will be just, you know, food.
Yeah.
No. And this is a culture.
Leo
this is people.
Leo loves journalism. So yeah, this is I a special place in his heart. Yeah.
PennyDeLosSantos.com. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for joining us, Penny.
And don't forget.
Yeah, thank you.
Last chance. The Twit Photo Guest Quest, go to katherinehall.net. If you haven't entered, you just have hours left if you're watching us live. If you're watching us after the fact, it's probably too late.
And you should have the link for next week's guest.
Oh, I'm excited about next week's guest, actually. Let me pull up her or his site.
So, super excited. He's actually...
Bob Martin.
Bob Martin is our guest next week, and he's actually in charge. He's the head lead photographer for the Olympic Games coming up. So this is huge.
That's exciting.
Yeah. So he's from the UK, obviously, and he's amazing. So for all the sports fanatics out there, and these are not portraiture sports. These are full-on
action shooting.
Yeah.
Very challenging stuff.
I would say, he's amazing.
Can't wait.
It's absolutely phenomenal.
So thank you,
Next
Penny.
Week should be great.
Next week, tune in. We do this show every Tuesday.
And Penny, thank you so, so much for joining us and sharing everything.
Yeah, thank you guys.
It was so great,
great
to have you on the show.
You too. Enjoy your turkey and your crazy crazy guest subject in the funny hat, whoever that might be. We do this show every Tuesday, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern time. Let's see, 13:30 plus 8 is 21:30 UTC. If you're outside the U.S., you can watch us. We're live. But if you miss a show, you don't have to miss a show because we record audio and video, and you can always see the show after the fact. Just go to twit.tv. And if you haven't seen all the episodes, watch them. One of the things that Catherine's done so well, somebody was saying, you're a great producer, Catherine. She is. She's brought us so many wonderful photographers, and we've learned so much and enjoyed so much their art. So join us every week. Thank you, Catherine. Thank you, Penny. Thank you all for being here, and we'll see you next week on Twit Photo.